unknowable to the discursive mind. It's no doubt the mind I'm using right now to not understand it. This is Buddhist Books Podcast, episode 285, Shingon Buddhism, part 8. If you would like to start at the beginning of the Shingon Buddhism playlist, in which we are reading The Matrix and Diamond World Mandalas in Shingon Buddhism by Adrian Snodgrass, you can click right here. That'll take you to the playlist. All right. Welcome back. And for those who don't know this, you saw me point to that briefly when I said 285. So if you notice, the clock hand is pointing downward toward the 5. It's an 8-pointed clock, not like a normal clock. So yes, 285. So that ends in 5. So we're doing Shingon Buddhism. The little wheels that you see in most of the spots refer to the Tipitaka, the pre-sectarian early Buddhism that we read most of the time on Buddhist Books Podcast. And there's a little symbol, the combination of the 8 auspicious symbols for the 0. So we read Tibetan Vajrayana when we're at the 0, Japanese Vajrayana at the 5, and then Japanese Zen at the 8, and Chinese Chan, or Zen, rose by any other name. At the 2 and the 8, we read Zen. At the 0 and the 5, we read Vajrayana, and all the rest of them are Tipitaka. Just so you know what's happening on Buddhist Books Podcast, I can tell from the comments that I should mention that. Okay, anyway, moving forward, hope everybody's doing well, having a wonderful day, a wonderful week, and I'm looking forward to this. So, without further ado, I will begin reading, picking up right where we left off last time. So my left wrist is giving me a little trouble, so if you notice me being a little awkward with the book, it's to avoid. This is a very heavy book. Okay, here we go. Secondly, Samaya equates the original vow taken by a Buddha or Bodhisattva to define the means he employs to aid beings to awakening. The Samaya and the vow of a world-honored one are equivalent expressions of the nature of his inner realization. For example, the Bodhisattva Avalokitesvara, or Kanon Bosatsu, embodies the virtue of great compassion, Mahakaruna in Sanskrit, or Daihi in Japanese, which is the nature of his inner realization. His original vow is to use his great compassion to open the heart minds of sentient beings so as to reveal the innate bodhicitta. His Samaya knowledge seal is the lotus, which is like the heart mind of the being in the way it opens to reveal its hidden beauty. Avalokiteshvara's Samaya, the lotus, and his original vow are cognate signs of the functioning of his great compassion. The Bodhisattva, the virtue of his inner realization of great compassion, his original vow and the lotus, the seal of his Samaya knowledge, fully interpenetrate. Thirdly, Samaya signifies, quote, removal of hindrances, end quote. It functions to destroy obstructions to the attainment of awakening, and in this equates the virtue of Buddhahood embodied in a honzon, which similarly functions as method to destroy the three hindrances of passion, karma, and suffering that obstruct the way. The Samaya knowledge seal interpenetrates the honzon's power to remove hindrances. Fourthly, Samaya signifies, quote, surprise awakening, end quote, the honzon's power to awaken beings from their sleep of ignorance. So there's footnotes. There's a lot of footnotes. I mean, there's two footnotes, but they're very long, and they, to be honest, they look a little bit interesting. So when it mentioned the three hindrances, there was a footnote, footnote 50. It says here, the three hindrances, Trini, Avaranani, and Sansho, are the obstructions to the attainment of awakening. Passion, which includes defilements such as lust, anger, and ignorance. Karma, or past action, and suffering, the retribution of being born in this world of pain. The other footnote was when it talks about, oh, okay, after sleep of ignorance, there's footnote 51, but I think this footnote refers to surprise awakening, so we'll read about that. There are several types of surprise awakening. Firstly, in rituals, the tzedakah surprise awakens the, quote, holy multitudes, end quote. The honzon and the, quote, ocean assembly, end quote, of his attendants from their samadhi in order to invite them to descend into the places prepared for them in the mandala. In another type, the one referred to here, the surprise awakening shocks the bodhisattva into Buddhahood. The Hinayana and exoteric Mahayana claim that the bodhisattva attains awakening when he enters the diamond samadhi, but esoteric Buddhism teaches that awakening is not attained in this samadhi unless the bodhisattva is surprised by the hidden Buddhas. The Renegebu, Shinjiki, for example, says, quote, in meditation he analyzes the nature of the dharmas and recognizes that they are all in his own mind, and that all the passion-evolved regions of the world of the aggregates of passion are like flames in a dream. But when this analysis and meditation has been completed, he still does not see that the knowledge of supreme truth, identity, and tranquility abides in his own body and mind. And therefore, all the Tathagatas in the void snap their fingers and realize him into awakening, and surprise him into awakening, saying, quote, O son of good family, the station you have realized, the station of the purity of the one way, of the adamantine samadhi, and of complete knowledge, has not enabled you to attain realization. It is not yet complete. Quote. Thus, they completed the realization of Samantabhadra, or Fugen in Japanese, so that he attained the highest perfect awakening. End quote. How long have we been in quotes? Oh, that was all quoting the Renegbu Shinjiki. I forgot we were in quotes. Okay. No longer in quotes. Back in the normal footnote. Similarly, the Sesshinjiko says that the attainment of Buddhahood by the Bodhisattva Shakyamuni, Buddha, commonly known, is the surprise awakening of the transformation Buddha, the manifestation of Vairocana Buddha. Also, the Shugukyo says that Isaigijo, meaning all fulfilled, that is Shakyamuni before his attainment of Buddhahood, having practiced austerities for 6 weeks without gaining right awakening, sat himself in the place of awakening and, quote, sank into silence, end quote, whereupon, quote, an infinitude of transformation Buddhas appeared in the sky and surprised the Bodhisattva, end quote. As a result of this surprise awakening, he meditated on the syllable Om, and thereby attained complete Buddhahood. It's making reference to these other scriptures that it'd be nice to find copies of in English to read after we finish this in the 2030s sometime. Several sutras, such as the Vajra Sekhara Sutra, the Ryakushutsunenjukyo and the Shugokyo relate how Shakyamuni, the Buddha, who appeared in a factitious body in India to preach the Dharma, we're familiar with him, it's Buddha, yeah, the one that the Hinayana folk call Lord Buddha. Sorry, I'll just stick to the reading, was unable to attain full awakening until he practiced the meditation on the body composed of the five forms, and as a result was surprise awakened by the hidden Buddha in the palace of the heaven of the highest limit of form. Having received the highest perfect awakening in this way, he possessed the five knowledges and became the Buddha Vairocana, and revealed the diamond world mandala for the sake of the bodhisattvas of the 10 stations. He then descended from the heaven of the highest limit of form to the summit of Mount Meru, where he revealed the mandala a second time for the bodhisattvas and beings of the lower levels. Mahavairocana Tathagata, at the center of the diamond world mandala, is shown in the form he was in at the time of his perfection of right awakening in the palace of heaven of the highest limit of form. Okay, that's the end of the footnote. Getting back to the text. The sword, the Samaya knowledge seal of the Bodhisattva Manjushri. In the Japanese, that's Monju Bosatsu, shows how a Samaya incorporates these four meanings. The sword equates Manjushri's virtue of wisdom, which, sword-like, cuts away ignorance, defilements, and delusion. It embodies Manjushri's original vow to use the wisdom sword to aid all beings to awakening. It removes hindrances, cutting away all that obstructs the attainment of Buddhahood. And it means Manjushri uses to shock, it is the means Manjushri uses to shock the unenlightened from their sleep of nescience. Editor Edward, could you do a vocab word for us? Nescience. You can put it up above my head. That's fine. Thank you, Editor Edward. The Samaya sword and the Bodhisattva it represents are homologous representations of wisdom. The sword interpenetrates Manjushri's virtue, his original vow, and the method whereby he removes hindrances and awakens sentient beings. C. Dharma knowledge seals. The Dharma Knowledge Seal is the third type of visual symbol used for meditational visualizations in esoteric rituals. The term Dharma here means doctrine. Footnote, the different meanings of the word Dharma are given above. Wow, says page 12, note 1. I kind of want to go back to, I hope you don't mind if I take a moment and go back. I think that was a footnote we skipped at the time, but I'm curious to see what it will say about different kinds of Dharma, because it's an elusive word. The Sanskrit word Dharma, translated as ho in Sino-Japanese, is a multivalent and ambiguous term. In its broadest sense, it means, quote, that which is held fast or kept, end quote. Or, quote, something that maintains a certain character always and becomes a standard of things, end quote. It has the meanings of one, law, truth, righteousness. Two, one was three things, but okay. Two, the universal norms or laws that govern human existence. Three, the Buddha's teachings, the Buddhist canon. Four, good deeds that have no defilement. Five, the consequence of action or karma, karma meaning action. The result of previous action, which must work itself out. That's commonly known as karma phala, if I'm not mistaken. Or in conventional English, karma. Which is not accurate. But anyway, okay. Six, the whole universe as the object of thought. That's my understanding, anyway. All right. Oh, it goes on. In other contexts, as here it is, quote, here what? That which has entity and bears its own attributes, end quote. Oh, that's from the Japanese English Buddhist Dictionary. Then from the Dictionary of Chinese Buddhist Terms, that which had, no, and practically is synonymous with thing. The phrase isaiho, meaning all entries, all entities, excuse me, is a common one in the Buddhist literature and is equivalent to phenomenon or the phenomenal world. In esoteric Buddhism, the Dharma body is the Buddha body that comprises all the dharmas, all the things of the total universe. So if you were confused about the word Dharma before, now everything's clear, right? All right, continuing. The term Dharma here means doctrine, the word preached in various modes by the forms adopted by Mahavairocana's four types of Dharma body. Each of these modes or aspects of the Dharma can be comprised within a single sound. A dharani contains the essential meanings of a Dharma. A single syllable further concentrates the meanings contained in the dharani. Since it contains the essence of a dharma, this syllable sound is called a, quote, seed syllable, end quote. Sanskrit bija, Japanese jushi. A dharma knowledge seal is the written Sanskrit form of the seed syllable, used in rituals as an object of visualization. The syllable is a seed in two senses. It contains all knowledge in the way that a seed contains the leaves, flowers, and fruits of a plant, and it is the cause, both productive and revealing, of the manifestation of knowledge in the way that the seed reveals its hidden content and produces leaves, flowers, and fruits when exposed to activating causes such as sunlight and rain. Every honzon has a seed syllable, which contains the sum of the dharma he preaches and focuses the virtues, powers, and qualities he personifies. the form, sound, position in the Sanskrit alphabet and component parts of the syllable accord with a strict logic of symbolic correspondences, connecting it to the Honzon's iconography, mudra, samaya form, and dharani. And this is very interesting, and I've asked a lot of people if there's more to the Sanskrit alphabet than just the sounds, and I haven't gotten anywhere. This here claims that there is. I'll read that again. The form, sound, position in the Sanskrit alphabet and component parts of the syllable accord with a strict logic of symbolic correspondences. I would like to know what those are. All right, without joining a cult if possible. The seed syllable, being the essence of a dharani, is often the first word in mantras connected with the matrix world. Since this is the world of initiation into the path of awakening, and it is usually the last word in mantras belonging to the world-honored ones of the diamond world, since this is the world of the fulfillment of Buddhahood. In the former case, the dharani is an unfolding of the potentiality of Buddhahood contained in the seed. In the latter, it is the complexion of that unfolding. For example, the seed syllable ah, that of Mahavairocana, Tathagata, in the matrix world, is the initial syllable of his world, of his matrix world dharani, quote, avi rahum kam, end quote. It's a footnote. This is analyzed in greater detail following. Okay. The last four syllables of this dharani, which represent forms of purification and liberation, all rise from this first syllable, ah, as from the matrix of principle. Mahavairocana's seed syllable in the diamond world, on the other hand, is Vam, and in this world his dharani is Vajradhatu Vam, diamond world Vam, with the seed syllable coming at the last as the consummation of what lies before. By the same principle, the seed syllable of a Honzon is often the first syllable of his Sanskrit name. This name contains the essence of a Honzon's virtue, and in turn, the initial contains the essence of the name. For example, Va, the seed syllable of Suiten, the god of water, is the initial syllable of his Sanskrit name, Varuna, which contains the essence of the qualities of the element water. As does a mudra, a seed syllable incorporates an original vowel, Hri, the seed syllable of Amitabha Tathagata, or Amida Nyurai in Japanese, in the diamond world demonstrates this principle. The syllable Hri comprises the syllables Ha, Ra, I, and H. The final syllable, H, is the syllable of Nirvana, but it is an unvoiced aspirate, formed by an expiration of breath, just as Nirvana is a blowing out or an expiration, and being unvoiced expresses the, quote, serene and eternal silence, end quote, of Nirvana. The syllable H is indicated by adding, quote, Nirvana points, end quote, Nihon Den, two superimposed dots to the right of the syllable it modifies. These dots are called Visarga in Sanskrit, which word means, quote, liberation, end quote, or, quote, extinction, end quote. The verbal preposition V expresses separation, dispersion, and privation, as in, quote, asunder, apart, off, away, without, end quote. And sarga, from square root of srig. I'm not really sure what that, the check before the srig is supposed to mean. Means, quote, to discharge, utter, let go, release, end quote. Visarga is thus practically synonymous with nirvana, which is likewise, quote, liberation, extinction, a blowing out, or an expiration, end quote. The addition of the syllable H, the nirvana points after the syllables ha, ra, and e, indicates that the notions they symbolize are transposed to the level of nirvana. Ha is the initial syllable of the Sanskrit word hetu, meaning cause. Ra is that of rajas, kings, the brilliant. That says the brilliant. Maybe I'm misinformed about my understanding of rajas. Rajas, the brilliant, and thus the element fire. And E, the initial of Isa, spontaneity or freedom. Jizai. I can't help wondering how, I mean, you know, this, whoever wrote this, I mean, Adrian knows more about this than I do, clearly. But there's cases where there's a root, I mean, a seed syllable. My understanding is there's the prefixes and suffixes and root words like sta, the root of stop, statue, star, store, a lot of words that start with sta, and they all hold still. Is it a similar kind of thing here, where this is like proto-Sanskrit or something? I'm just curious. Feel free to comment below if you know about these things or you know where I can learn more about it. With the addition of H, the symbol ha becomes the syllable of the state of nirvana in which causality is transcended. Ra, the syllable of fire, is here the fire of knowledge that burns away ignorance. And E, spontaneity, is ungraspable spontaneity. That is, the freedom or spontaneity of the void. Taken as a whole, the symbol Hri thus represents the attainment of nirvana, which is a transcendence of causality and ignorance, and the attainment of the freedom of void. Note that if you quote something like this on Facebook, you might get someone from a different type of Vajrayana Buddhism saying, there is no void, only the suchness. So, I don't know. I take what I can from the different sources and mull it over, but I don't side with one and fly the flag and argue against the others that use slightly different terminology. That seems foolish to me, but that's just me. In this way, the syllable Hri is a concise summation of Amitabha's original vow to bring all beings to nirvana by freeing them from the causal net of karma. This is very interesting. I'm going to have to re-listen to this one a few times. Try to absorb some of these seed syllables. I mean, I know the syllables associated with the chakras, you know, commonly used. So there's that, Ra. Makes sense. Okay. To say that E in this context means ungraspable spontaneity is to use the term ungraspable, or anupalamba, in Japanese fukatoku, in a technical sense. In Buddhist writings, generally the term ungraspable is a synonym of voidness, or shunyata, meaning zero. Oh, okay. That's what they're translating as voidness, shunyata. Or koku, so no thing, ein in Hebrew, that would be closer to voidness. Interesting. Okay, click. And refers to the, quote, true essence of the middle way, End quote. So to say, there is no void, only suchness, is the equivalent of saying there is no ein, only ein sof, or, which is silly. It's silly to say there is no. That's just understanding the definition of there is no, isn't it? All right. There is no, there is no. Anyway. The true essence of the middle way, which is non-perceptible and unknowable to the discursive mind. It's no doubt the mind I'm using right now to not understand it. In esoteric Buddhism, however, it refers specifically to the essential meaning of a seed syllable, the meaning that pertains to the void and therefore cannot be grasped by the senses or by thought. Every seed syllable has two meanings, the apparent meaning, or jiso meaning, which is graspable, in quotes, and its profound, or jigi, meaning, which is ungraspable. Jiso, graspable, jigi, ungraspable. Okay. The apparent meaning pertains to phenomena, and the profound meaning pertains to the void. Okay, form, emptiness, emptiness, form. Things are starting to click. So voidness. Is void the same as voidness? I don't know. But voidness and ku in the Heart Sutra, I mean, obviously in other things too, but ku in that particular ku ho yu, I mean, that part, you know the one. Form is emptiness, emptiness is form. In... the Heart Sutra. The apparent meaning of the syllable ha, for example, is causation, but its profound meaning is the ungraspable cause, lying in the void. The syllable m is indicated by a void point, or kuden, a dot or semicircle and dot written above the syllable. Yeah, it's an M with a dot over it. In Sanskrit, this is called the anusvara, the, quote, following sound, end quote, and indicates that the syllable to which it is added loses itself in a final M sound, never being suppressed entirely, but prolonging itself indefinitely, even when it has become indistinct and imperceptible. It signifies that the concept conveyed by the syllabic, or by that the concept conveyed by the syllable is absorbed into the void. All right, I'm going to read some interesting footnotes now. Footnote number 61, it was next to ungraspable. Jiso is literally syllable appearance or syllable form, and jigi is syllable meaning. Okay, so they're calling it apparent and profound. All right. Footnote number 62 is next to void. Every seed syllable has two levels of meaning. The term ungraspable or unattainable has four levels of meaning, but its exegenesis would require a separate study. Oh, thank you. A footnote that tells us nothing, except that it's not going to tell us. It's another story for another time. Footnote number 63 is next to the word syllable, but maybe it's about that whole sentence. In Sanskrit, the semicircle and dot is the nada and bindu, called the... The anunasika. In Japanese, it is the gyogaten, the upturned moon and point. And then at the end of... is absorbed into the void is footnote 64. The syllable am, for example, represents awakening, being the absorption into silence of the potentialities contained in the seed syllable ah, that of Mahavairocana in the matrix world. Awakening is the great void. In this connection, subhakarasimha
says, quote, the sound Om is the seed syllable of the perfection of Bodhi. The first syllable in this, Ah, is Bodhicitta, and the void point added above it is the great void. Awakening is the great void, and the great void is the perfection of Bodhi. End quote. Quoted in the Mikyo Daijiten, but originally from Dainichi Kyosho, apparently. The syllable N replaces M in the Japanese transliterations of Sanskrit so that the void point does not strictly equate the Anusvara. Further, since Japanese N also replaces the Sanskrit syllables N, 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 and M with various kinds of dots and wavy lines around the N, the syllables na, 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 again, I'm not the person to be reading this. My wife is Indian. I live in India, if you didn't know. So I often run into a situation where I don't hear a difference, or my brain doesn't register a difference between different types of N or different types of C or CH, where here it's very important that you get the right one. I think because growing up in a place where there's a variety of different accents, a variety of different people from different regions and different countries all speaking English, I'm used to, you know, hearing a word and then doing sort of a mental search for what's the closest word that might be the word that they're saying, and then matching it. So I'm more, you know. Plus, the California accent is, you know, unconsciously. Anyway, never mind. It's not very interesting. All these different nas and ma are also called void points in the Taimitsu. Okay, I'm going to keep reading. This isn't very interesting. all right. D, the last part of this particular thought. Action knowledge seals. Action knowledge seals. Okay, I forgot that all this seed syllable stuff was one of the knowledge seals. Dharma knowledge seals, the seed syllable. Samaya knowledge seals and great knowledge seals. Okay. And now finally, D, action knowledge seals, or karma knowledge seals, no doubt. Action knowledge seals are the fourth type of symbol used in meditational practices. The term action knowledge seal, or karma jnana mudra, or kama shi in, is synonymous with action mandala, karma mandala, or kama mandara in Japanese. Action seals are uncolored anthropomorphic images, as contrasted with great knowledge seals, which are anthropomorphic images painted in the colors of the five elements. Remember these? Sorry. Action seals depict Buddhas and Bodhisattvas performing actions of, quote, awe-inspiring deportment, end quote. They also depict the actions of awe-inspiring deportment of the enlightened Sadaka. The dignified and decorous actions of, quote, walking, standing, sitting, and lying down, end quote, displayed by the being who has realized that all his movements are mudras, all his utterances are dharanis, and all his thoughts are jhana. Meditation, right? Same as Zen and Chan. I mean, the word is the same. Awe-inspiring deportment belongs both to the world-honored ones and to those who achieve union with them in all their actions of body, speech, and mind. Okay. Should I read a bit more? So we finished the A, B, C, and D. I think we started with the A in the episode 7, but now here we are. Okay, when it is said that the forms employed in Shingon rituals, mandalas, anthropomorphic images, mudras, dharanis, seed syllables, and samaya signs are symbols. I think I know where this is going to go, but let's see. The term is to be understood in a special sense. Okay, let me guess, just based on what we've read so far. It's not a symbol that refers to something other than what it is. The symbol is what it is. Something like that? Let's find out. It has a connotation quite other than that given it in contemporary linguistics-based thinking, where the symbol or sign signifies a referent that belongs exclusively to the sensible and cognitive realms. Nor, on the other hand, should it be interpreted in the manner of those writers for whom, following the Platonic tradition, the symbol has a referent that stands in a supra-sensible and supra-cognitive realms. The former view locates the symbol and what it signifies on the same horizontal level of reality. In the latter view, they are vertically differentiated. So, in other words, a symbol that means apple exists in the same world as an apple that you bite. But in the Platonic view, the symbol that means apple refers to the idea of appleness, of which actual physical apples are just examples, but not the thing itself. Does that make sense? No, that's okay. It doesn't make sense to non-Platonists. Just kidding. I mean, it can make sense without making sense. The Shingon symbol, by contrast, dignifies not a sensible or conceivable referent, but the void. And it does not signify a transcendent reference, since the void is not separate from sensible and cognizable forms. Quote, form is emptiness, and the very emptiness is form. Emptiness does not differ from form, nor does form differ from emptiness. Whatever is emptiness is form, end quote. From the Prajnaparamita Hridaya Sutra, the Sutra of the Heart of Great Wisdom. Yes, we were talking about that earlier. I'm going to go ahead and close there for today. Ooh, this was fun. I hope that you enjoyed it. And next time, we will, well, as you know from the clock, next time we will be back down to Earth, following around one particular individual who the Shingon will have to explain to you who it is, but in pre-sectarian early Buddha, he's known as Lord Buddha. So, and he's doing things like teaching monks how to use napkins and things like that, and something I enjoy. Not everybody enjoys it. For those of you who don't, you can wait a few weeks, right, before part 9 of Shingon Buddhism. If you're interested, may I entice you into tuning in to the Zero episodes as well, the Life and Liberation of Padmasambhava. It's a different window into a different thousand-year evolution of Vajrayana Buddhism from the Shingon whose interest may have led you to watching this video and watching all the way through. Thank you for watching it all the way through. If you wouldn't mind, if you want to help support this channel by clicking like and subscribe, I'm not asking for any donations or anything like that. Just, give the algorithm a little nudge that maybe they can show this video to more people, and maybe they'll enjoy it as well. So, again, thank you for joining us, or me, I should say. And we'll go ahead and do our usual closing here on Buddhist Books Podcast. To the north and to the south, to the east and to the west, to the spirits of light among us and to the spirits below, we send out our reverent love and compassion. May all beings be happy. May all beings be serene.
May all beings be in peace. Until next time.